Interview with the Podcast Vampire is a retrospective on the filmography of living legend Tom Cruise, hosted by Dale underscore A, Jonesy Loves Beer, and Slim.
Ron Howard, 1992. American epic romantic adventure drama film starring Tom and Nicole, Far and Away.
Perhaps not the strongest offering in this list.
Oh, man.
But I will
say,
Jonesy
stands. We know where Jonesy stands.
The most amazing level of effort from any and all parties in this film. And you got to give it a lot of credit for that.
Jonesy loves beer fresh off of a hunt at Q-Mart, Quakertown, PA. He's a former writer. He's back. But just to dig in, didn't you rate this like 5 stars on Letterboxd the other night?
Oh, the climax of the film is why I got rated 5 stars. I don't want to skip ahead. It might involve someone striking a horse in the face with their own bare fist. And instead of that hand shattering like glass,
The horse
gets
does.
Knocked out.
Yeah.
Amazing. I just, what the zero research that went into that strike, it really redeemed everything in my eyes.
VP of the Paper Keg Radio Syndicate Merch Squad Street Team, the third host of the show, Dale underscore A, the Silver Fox, the podcast. Retired bad boy. Welcome back.
Feels great to be back hitting our stride here. Third episode since the new year, in 2 years basically, of our Tom Cruise journey. Interview with the Podcast Vampire, Far and Away. Here we are. Feels great to be talking about a movie I actually used to watch. I've watched at least 5 or 6 times at my grandmother's. Slim, you and I have spoken at great length about movie watching at my grandmother's house, but this was probably one of the couple of VHSs that were for sale at the back of the Avon catalog.
And, is this a double VHS?
Oh, yeah, this is definitely a double VHS. And, you know, I watched it a couple times. There we go.
There it is. It's out in the open now. The truth is out. You're in a safe space.
I feel better.
I'm glad you were able to feel comfortable in sharing that with us.
Thank you.
This was the first time I've ever seen this movie. The number one time. Mm-hmm. I've always kind of held it off to the side, you know, a pile of things that I'll get to.
Sure.
When I have time.
Sure, yeah.
I'm in no rush.
I don't think, nobody needs to be in a rush to see this. Until now, because we're talking about it, you should watch along.
Far and Away, get the Blu-ray, get it on Vudu, disc to digital, check it out. Tom Cruise, Nicole Kidman, Ron Howard, you hear those three names, your body is ready.
Mm-hmm.
Immediate readiness, if you get my meaning. Jonesy, can you, in as short as you possibly can for this nearly 3 hour epic,
I don't know. I'm a little gun shy after I was opened by Dale's karambit of stare after I got one detail wrong with Days of Thunder. So I'm going to just ease on in there. So Tom plays a Irish Dale, Irish farmer's son named Joseph. And his father protests Mr. Christie. Listen, if I drank every time he yelled Shannon in this movie, I would be on dialysis right now. So anyhow, Joseph, his father dies, and he protests this guy named Christie, who's like this landlord type character who everybody hates. He falls in a collapse. Pretty much dies of a brain cloud, to quote Joe versus the Volcano. Kind of Christie's right-hand man on the day of Tom's father's funeral burns his house to the ground. So Tom's like, Poppy. He gets his old bolt action rifle, Dale bolt action. And sorry, I'll stop now. Travels to Christie's hometown, where he kind
of... still only in the first 5 minutes of the movie right now.
You know what? I'm going to skip ahead. Assassination attempt goes bad. Tom, criminal. Nicole, daughter of Christie, says, let's run away to America. They do. They try for a facsimile of a life where Nicole loses me spoons, me priceless ancient spoons. And then suddenly she's shot, and then they split for 8 months and then reconvene when they race for land. And maybe it's a Dakota, Nebraska. I'm not sure they're racing. Dale's signaling me no. Could be Indiana,
Oklahoma.
Could be any, Oklahoma. So I got it right thereabouts. And thus we have Far and Away.
Wow. So
Shannon,
Joseph.
So she's my sister. When she says her name,
Joseph. Oh, and I'm your mother,
Joseph.
Take us through it, Dale, please.
Yeah. So I mean. Right. It's Ron Howard, right? It's like, so you think you're climbing into bed with something that's going to be like epic, like Braveheart. You know what I mean?
Ugh.
But I don't know. I don't know what the word is. Like, it felt a little revisionist, a little too squeaky clean, a little too lighthearted of a movie for the reason why the movie happens, right, to begin with. Like, I'm jumping right into my Uber review of the whole thing, so I don't know if that's...
Yeah, take us there.
If we want act by act, this would be a 7-hour show.
Yeah, that's true. But, like, I mean, I liked the movie. I like... I like that it's, in a sense, like, you know, this is like me, since I've seen it before or whatever, this is me cocktailing it for the third time or whatever, but, like, it felt a little too lighthearted and comedic for what the movie was supposed to be. Like, at the beginning of the movie, during Joseph's father's funeral, they burn his house down. And nobody pays for that in a satisfying manner.
Nobody stops the funeral, first of all. No one's like, can we set this casket down for a second and save everything I've ever had my entire life? I don't know.
Yeah, right. But the barren landowner, I get, is too high up the rungs in the chain to really know that this guy's house got burnt down, right? But he has to know that probably on a daily basis somebody's house gets burnt for not paying the rent.
And right, he's got thugs.
And Dharma and Greg turns out just to be the silly little love interest who ends up at the end of the movie too. But he's the one that set the fire. He's not a big old piece of shit. He's not scum. You end up, you know, disliking him, but you don't hate him as well as, like, you don't, it just doesn't feel like even Joseph hates him. And, yeah, and you end up rooting for this Baron, you know, the old coot from the great outdoors who, you know, has a dog with porcupine quills in his nose.
I don't think at any point in this movie do you feel strong emotion for anyone, including Tom and Nicole.
Like, for such a sweeping epic that it's supposed to be, where the Irish are, you know, the lowest of the low as they're getting off the boat into Boston, right? And people are taking advantage of them from the second they step off the boat. Even, you know, people of their own kind who are more savvy to the American way of life, you know, the more swindly kind of thing. It's just like nobody, like, you don't feel for people's plights, like the struggle that they're going through.
Yeah, because they all kind of make out fine. Maybe they should have had Dharma and Greg be the actual boss and have Great Outdoors be like retired, because he was like comedic value for the entire movie, except for that bar scene where Tom meets him in the bar and realizes he's the guy I want to kill. They should have had Darby and Greg in there as someone to be feared. Make him more of a villain.
Yeah, and maybe
this 3-hour movie.
Completely agree.
What's the drive? The driving force is for kind of like quietly for him to get land. He wants land. That's not like, you know, that's not a villain,
Joseph,
you know?
Joseph, land is the soul of every man. And rest in peace, is that.
And you get, sure, you get like, you know, I completely agree, Matt, because like you would get Darman Greg being the big piece of crap that he should be. And then, you know, Nicole Kidman's dad could still be the guy who you want to love. And, you know, mm-hmm. but maybe they, you know, comedically drive her so crazy that she's got to move across the ocean.
Right.
I would argue that the true antagonist of this movie is Kalmini, the fight promoter. That they're kind of like building their own life in Boston. You know, to clue the audience in, if you have not watched Far and Away, if not, what are you waiting for? Tom Cruise becomes like a prize fighter. Like he's no reasonable skill. We've learned already he's an S-hole farmer. He's not very good at it. So the only thing he can really do is throw a punch. And even that is, you know, suspect. But he rises to the ranks, becomes a prize fighter. And on the eve of his greatest victory, spoilers, fails miserably, gets a clock knocked off.
So annoying.
And, you know, that kind of leads to him and Nicole breaking into that home and Nicole being shot. So like all the, like there's a glimmer of hope when they get to Boston, like, hey, maybe we are more than just like traveling companions. Maybe I'm going to build this life for you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's some definite chemistry and tension there. And then Kalmini is like, he's the one that kind of like pulls the rug up from everyone.
He threw, first of all, I find it completely unbelievable that his fighting with his psychopath, sociopath brothers as growing up made him a prize fighter.
Because yeah, that's all right.
It's essentially right. His only fighting history.
Right.
Never and boxed background. A day in his life.
Never boxed a day in his life. And you can actually see this because his vicious punches that he's like telling his boss how to punch, there's nothing behind them. His body is behind the person that he's punching, and he's like showing his boss, you gotta hit him right in the chest. And then his like shoulder is behind the person he's punching. It's a fake punch.
Yeah.
You're obviously not even touching them. It's like so crap.
What you gotta like, do, Calm, is stage punch everybody. That's how you knock them out.
It's junk. He should have not won any fights at all. It was a complete farce that he was a prize fighter.
Right. He's like, you just dodge what they're throwing. Like no mammal.
Human being has ever tried that before.
No, yeah, they tried to not get hit before this in newly discovered America.
I just want to go through like my earliest notes. I thought you're right on about the comedic elements of this movie, coupled with the dark elements. It didn't fit at all. When his dad gets when the house falls on him, I was cracking up.
It was so silly, like a styrofoam log, like hit him.
The cart hits this leg out of this roof. It collapses on the dad. I was like, oh my god! I wrote lol when the guy eats it, and then I wrote, oh, this sucks. Like when I was just like 20 minutes of the movie, this sucks. Heartless brothers, this sucks. I was so bored and wanted to jump out of the window in the first 40, 60 minutes of this movie.
And how about when, before the dad dies, he like pops back up again, like comedically.
Yeah. Could have been, which comes back at the end.
Yeah.
Not as comedically. But you could have easily just cut that out with the dad and cut it out at the end. Just have him come back.
Right.
Ron Howard's brother just makes my skin crawl in this movie.
Clint Howard, yeah.
My God.
What's his name? Lind Howard?
Clint. It's Clint.
Clint Howard.
Even worse, so somehow.
When they're in the States, she loses her spoons. They're
metaphorically.
Barely making ends meet yet.
My ancient family spoons. Joseph, they're taking them.
Terrible. She's terrible. They act as brother and sister. And he gets kind of like,
what purpose?
I guess, free room and board you know, at this prize fighting bar. And there's one scene where, you know, there's like tension between them, but they're not doing anything of it. Where they go to sleep one night after like an argument, and even the women in this bar don't think that they're actually brother and sister.
Right.
And they hear somebody like having sex in the next room, and Tom's sexual frustration is so hot and beaming, he goes and like joins his first prize fight match and just mops the floor with anyone. That's how he gets out his sexual tension, by beating people up. Unbelievable.
It was amazing that like he just takes off down the road for the social club. Just like, he is so virile and like ready to just tear down the city of Boston.
Like, he's gonna start humping someone's leg. That's how intense it was for him.
But and that, like, the city of Boston in the social club, like, for such an epic movie, like we say, there's like three sets to this movie. There's Ireland, there's the ship, and then there's like the back lot of the movie studio that's like one street in Boston. Like, mm-hmm. the only sets in Boston are the, you know, the corner view to their house with the window up above, and the social club. Like, for such a sweeping 2.5 hour, you know, like, deep dive, it's like, you know, the same set that you would use on like Hercules, The Legendary Journeys. Like, it's just like the same town in every episode.
Well, I feel like, so to give an example of it done correctly, like, what about Tombstone? Like, every time you step into a different part of Tombstone or a different city, like, you know it's one set, right? Like, you know physically they built one set.
I thought it was like well shot, like the sets and the set pieces in this movie. I thought every angle,
it was shot in an airplane hangar in Tampa. I feel like
the cinematography was great. So then you start to see were you referencing the boss of the town, Jenzy? What was his name?
Well, his actor's name is Cole Meany.
Yeah, like the guy who tells him, you're going to fight this hot shot, you're going to win me some money. And Tom, you know, full of his virility, says, you know, F you, I do what I want. Like, who are you, Tom, to say no to the boss of this town? Which, I guess, as I say that out loud, he sees some of that in the guy that burned down his house. So he's like rebelling a little bit, but even so, he agrees to do the fight, and the boss takes Nicole Kidman kind of like on his lap or whatever. And he's like flirting with her. Mm-hmm. He stops the fight and tries to get Nicole Kidman out of there. Are you kidding me? This money could set you up for whatever you want to do. You can leave after this fight. So he goes on to lose the fight, kicked out of the town, and their lives are essentially ruined for like the next year.
Right. So he's so chivalrous that he's, you know, he puts everything that they've worked for in danger, right? Whether she approves of it or not, he's earning money. But through the montage, I mean, he must have been fighting for 3 months easy, right? At least. He and Cole Meany didn't, like, he got no readings from Cole Meany about what kind of guy he really is, like who Tom Cruise is in bed with this whole time. He's a gangster at some level. So why be completely surprised that, you know, he, like, this crew that he's hanging around with hasn't harassed women before? And he should have expected that if he lost the fight at that point, he was going to get kicked out into the trash-filled streets, you know, the back alleys of Boston, like, after he ruined the fight.
Their life after that is so depressing. They essentially live the life of an addict that has no money.
Oh, yeah.
And that is going from, like, street to street. And they eventually, it got so bad, it's winter, it's snowing, they're freezing to death. They break into this house that has this, like, you know, nice dinner plate set up. So they're haggard in there, kind of just like living the fantasy for 2 seconds about how nice it would be to have an actual house.
Right.
And then the owner shows up and shoots, as they try to run away, shoots Nicole Kidman in the back with a shotgun. And he takes her to her parents' house because their house got burned down in Ireland. They're set up now in Boston as if nothing has happened, living the high life with Darma and Greg in the house. And so he leaves her there. He goes off on his own, goes on the train, get his own job, and they go their separate ways for like, what was it, 8 months?
8 months.
That they're separated?
Eight months. And that's at the and that's when we see them 8 months. It's got to be another 2 weeks to, you know, month by the time he decides to leave the train job and head towards Oklahoma for their land rush race.
I mean, so the jump in time is so shocking to me. He never tries to meet up with her again after that, which I can't even believe. How you even go through something like that and not try to write her a letter at the very least. So he's on his train. They're making a stop. He hears about the land run of 1893, and he makes a last second decision to stay there and try to take part in it and finally get land, his dream.
Mm-hmm.
He's walking through the setup of the land run. He stumbles upon Nicole Kidman. What are the chances?
Yeah, seriously.
He will come upon her family and not even that, nonchalantly, non-dramatically say hello to her. What a terrible scene
hello,
that was.
Hello, Shannon.
If he wanted to, right, he could have been, you know, that the start of that race, the starting line was like a mile wide. He could have never seen her if he just kept to the other side of camp. Like, he decided to, this was how it's going to be 8 months ago. He walked away. He decided never to look back. She's probably pretty bitter about that. But, you know, she's also like, she probably understands where Tom had to do what he had to do to save her life, right? Because he couldn't pull the bullet out. Darman Greg had to clean the wound. So that was that. But, and then the mom is like the throwaway line, like, oh, we came out here for you. But like, they could have stayed in Boston with the parents' money and lived at that nice house for the rest of the time. Mm-hmm. Like, what are the chances that day of the land rush? It's crazy.
Completely unbelievable.
Can we quickly talk about the best scene in the movie? Where,
please.
We,
and mind you, at this point, they haven't kissed yet. They've only kissed in Days of Thunder at this point in the movie. They haven't kissed yet.
In the Far and Away universe, their first kiss is officially 1992, Days of Thunder.
Right.
1991.
What if they get married and Joseph changes his name to Strickle to avoid like Irish, racism.
Yeah. Oh, right.
And
yes,
Israeli
exactly.
Plays his own descendant.
I mean, really, then he would be falling in love with a descendant of his own, Nicole Kidman.
I mean,
you know, they would have been like third cousins.
I'm
by
not
that
ready
point.
To get there. So
right. Let him have this.
I respectfully withdraw my earlier statement. So the best scene in the movie, Tom Cruise can't ride a horse. He's only ever ridden a donkey, I imagine. So
right.
The horse is like not having it. So being a prize fighter that he is, he hits the horse with the right hook. At no point do any bones in his hand shatter as he punches the much stronger horse in the face. And then the horse is like, yeah, you're right. And then gets instantly tamed. I mean,
right, he doesn't, like, the horse doesn't try to turn around and kick him with his strong back legs
right.
And like or kill him.
Yeah. Or just rear up on his back legs and just smash his face into the mud with one of its hooves.
Right. Right.
Hooves.
I love hearing Josie say the word hooves. There was another scene that could, you know, they have like a big board in the office, the editing room, where that's another scene like, yeah, let's get rid of that. That is dumb. That doesn't make any sense. It doesn't do anything.
And Ron,
too funny
Ron
for this
walks
sweeping
in with
epic.
A cup of coffee. He's like, oh, we're getting rid of the horse punching scene. I kind of like that.
Right. What do you mean? We're getting rid of the part where the dad wakes up from the dead? No, we got to keep that in. Keep it at the end, too, while you're at it, well, if
that's
possible.
How you know magic exists in this movie, that a man can return from the dead. We didn't even talk about that. And you can punch a horse, and you're fine.
Ugh, golly.
Yeah, you survive. You tame. That's how you tame a horse. That's how Aragorn tames all Brego. He punched Brego so hard in the Rohan stables.
There's a movie called The Horse Whisperer with Robert Redford, but people don't. He doesn't actually whisper. Whisper is the name of his right fist. And that's how he gets right. horses aligned.
Right.
The he eventually gets on the horse and they shoot the cannon and everyone makes a rush for these pieces of land that were marked by flags that I had no idea that this is how it happened in the Ozarks or wherever they were. They come upon this white flag, they plant their green flag. That means they own the land now.
That's their land. Like, yeah, it's. I wish I knew more about history.
Me too.
Because that's fascinating to me that happened. But it's also probably like, yeah, other people did own this land at one time, but we all corralled them and like made them live somewhere
right,
else.
Didn't they even show Native Americans in this scene? They were kind of just like off to the side somewhere, like looking not happy. Did you remember that scene?
No, I'm super
pretty
curious
sure it was this
though.
Movie.
And that land wasn't even that long ago. The Daytona 500.
This wasn't even that long ago, like 1893.
Yeah, 100 years.
More years. You're in the 1900s. That's it.
Yeah,
it's not that long ago.
Like it's absolutely not that long ago. It's crazy.
The scene where everyone is making the mad dash, I did enjoy it. You know, their carriages like falling apart, entire families falling out the back of a carriage, probably being killed by run over by horses.
Oh, certainly.
Oh, yeah. At least there was at least like a 25% mortality rate during this race.
God. At least. I would say 50 at this point.
Yeah. I mean, nobody was prepared for what was about to come.
The death and the destruction. Like, I clean up all the bodies in this area. They eventually get close to the land. And I did enjoy the final kind of scene where Darman Gregg and Nicole Kidman are riding their horse. Tom's catching up to them. And they come upon this plot of land and they have it out right in this little like water area.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was okay. And then they have the ending where Tom like has it. The one part I didn't understand, Tom wins the fight. He gets there first. He's holding up his flag. He says his famous line. You see the famous shot of like the camera zooming in on Tom where he's holding the flag.
The wind is like whipping.
Yeah, it was beautiful.
Yeah.
Just like every other shot in this movie. But why doesn't he plant the flag then? Why does he delay?
I know.
Because he wants to do it with her, maybe?
I don't know. He could, I mean, dramatically, it makes sense because they needed to finish this fight scene out or whatever, but right. Like, just do it.
Just
you've
do it.
Your
like,
whole life.
He could declare, like, Shannon, this is for you too. I'm planting the flag so nobody plants it in the next half second.
All right, Ron, so we plant the flag, and then the planting makes him so angry that he fights Tom. Oh, guys, you know, I feel instead like maybe a pause, like a long, dramatic pause. Like, I think
and
that's how it went.
Because it doesn't even really pay off in the sense that, oh, now Darman Gregg is going to plant the flag. God, if he gets that flag and plants it, I'm going to be so pissed. Mm-hmm. Darman Gregg gets the flag, doesn't even care. Because Nicole is with Tom. Tom suffers another dopey injury where now Nicole has to nurse him back to health again. The guy's an idiot. Yeah. And Darman Gregg sees this. He has the flag. He just tosses it. So then what the hell was that all for?
I know. What is it like? What like, this is real life scenario, okay? What's Darman Gregg going to do? Like, go back to Ireland after all this? No. He's going to pick up his flag. He's going to go to the next plot of land and plant it. And he's going to be their annoying neighbor where he's, like, leering in the windows and always still...
I would have much preferred that movie.
And they left the parents. The parents are what? At the beginning of the race? Like, at the beginning of the race starting line, and that's their plot of land? Are they going to, like, ever see Nicole Kidman again, or
right.
I mean,
I want to know so much more
like,
about
why did they split up? They went there as a family. Why didn't they race as a family?
Yeah, a lot of open questions because Darman Gregg just kind of like saunters off angrily.
Yeah,
did
where's
he just
he
walk?
Going?
Did he just walk for another mile and then just plant his flag?
His flag? Right. Yeah.
And now they're just going to be neighbors essentially. And I'm just so like, what was the planning of this land run? Did hundreds of soldiers just go out and mark pieces of area? How big were the areas where they just put a flag there? And, okay, now let's all go back a couple miles. We'll make that the starting line and people just get out here. I'm looking at a Wikipedia link. I could easily open it up, but I'm not going to. I'm just going to ask these questions rhetorically.
Right. And then what happens when, okay, so like at the beginning of the movie, they mentioned like it's like 144 acres a person, 160 acres, which is a massive amount of land, right? And even if it was that much or whatever, you plant your flag in the most perfect piece of land in Oklahoma, right? And you're sitting there waiting for somebody to come tally the results. And then in the meantime, here comes two D-bags with fully automatic weapons. They kill you. They dump your bodies in the river. They plant their flag. Nobody is there to witness.
Right.
Yeah. Not to fact check you, but I'm not sure that fully automatic weapons existed in 1893.
But this, I get the idea, because what's to stop essentially land pirates from going across these acres of land and be like, you're a 60-year-old man and a 55-year-old woman, and right. I don't see anyone else around you. Let's murder you and
yes,
take this flag.
Exactly.
Now we own a lot of this area. Now we essentially own all of the Ozarks or wherever they were, Oklahoma.
Yeah. Yeah,
I have so many questions.
Imagine the lieutenant colonel rides up, and there's two mounds, and then two guys like, what happened here? It's like, oh, what?
Yeah,
what happened where?
I've never noticed these mounds before, these bloody mounds.
Those mounds weren't there when you were marking these territories?
And I feel like I'm such an idiot for asking these questions, but I guess in much of Oklahoma, you know, these grandparents or these relatives were like, oh, yeah, my great-grandparents got this land from the land run of 1893. They just ran out here with their horse. That's how we got this property. I want to be hearing those stories. Why don't I hear these stories?
I completely agree with that. I would love to know more. I would love it. Because it's a real thing, because they had a date, September 16th, 1893. So it's like, I need to know more.
Yeah.
The premise of the movie is the land run from the earliest impetus of the movie, like 25 minutes in. They're like, oh, land, we Joseph.
Oh, yeah.
And then the only time they reference it is like the last 9 minutes of the film.
Mm-hmm.
This whole movie could have been about that and been amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
But instead, we spent an hour in Boston prize fighting with Cole Meany. Makes
Where's
no sense.
Where's the 10-part Ken Burns documentary on just the land rush alone?
My God, Ken's hair by the time of the completion of that movie would be electric.
Would be complete, like more two-tone than ever.
So we finished the movie as we started this episode with The Beauty of Enya. I haven't heard this song in maybe 15 years.
Mm.
Sounds just as good as the day I heard it. Ugh.
Real quick, I have some trivia for you before
get in
we
there,
depart.
Jonesy.
It's only one piece of trivia, but it's really the only piece of trivia that we need.
Uh-huh.
In the scene where Tom's genitalia is covered by a soup bowl.
Oh, God. Awkward scene.
They filmed a take where, and Ron Howard was not pleased with Nicole's reaction. He felt it was too canned. So he whispered to Tom to take his undies off.
No.
And Nicole actually saw the goods.
Wow.
And that was her genuine reaction.
I guess by that time they would have been together, so maybe that's okay.
I mean, she had seen it
you
know, many times. I'm winking for the audience.
Right.
Joseph.
Pretty dramatically winking.
Wow. That's classic Howard.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Tom, well, you know, what about for this take, you show her the Johnson?
Jonesy's Ron Howard sounds like Muppet Ron Howard.
Yeah, there's.
I'd like to thank Ron for coming in tonight
and
joining us as a guest host.
Imagine that voice narrating Arrested Development.
The movie?
Yeah, I've heard Ron Howard. He doesn't speak that with a high octave, but I can't. That's how I do every voice.
Movie that he did before Far and Away, 1991, Backdraft.
Oh, great movie.
Wow. That ride? Wasn't that a ride at Universal for many years?
I think it was. What if as a special episode, we did Backdraft?
My gosh.
Jeez, remember that deadly movie? My God, that was frightening.
I haven't seen that movie in a very long time. I think that was another TBS or VHS family rental that I saw that I was asked to go quickly up to bed, and I didn't remember anything else.
It was like that and Dante's Peak.
Oh, I love Dante's Peak. Love it. What was the volcano? Was the
that
competitor?
Was it Dante's Peak.
Oh,
was it just called Volcano?
Yeah, it was called Tommy Lee Jones. Remember, it was like a volcano hitting LA or something. But Dante's Peak was my of the two. That was my favorite of the two.
Pierce Brosnan in that.
God, like, he was amazing.
Deerskin jacket.
Remember, nobody believed him about the readouts in Dante's Peak. Also, the grandmother who refused to leave, who ended up having to walk through lava and died.
Oh, remember my that death God. Scene? Holy God. Jesus.
I must have seen Dante's Peak like 20 times.
Ron, remember when everybody searched Tom Cruise in the podcast search bar and then we spent the last 10 minutes talking about Dante's Peak?
Ron Howard, how did you feel about the grandmother having to walk through lava?
You know, it's pretty unrealistic because I think she would have burst into flames long before she touched the lava.
Listen, I'm just saying.
But for the drama.
I think her legs did erupt in flames when she got. She had to walk through the. Maybe after this. Hold on. Let me just see if
all
we can
nylon
pull up
and polyester.
Grandma legs. in auto finish. I put in grandma's legs D and it finished Dante's Peak. Oh, I was about to tell you to watch the scene. Oh my God. Okay. Just Google it. See if we can kind of watch all the same time. There's a 33 second clip on YouTube. You got to watch it. Can we watch it to close out this episode?
Let's do it.
Grandma burns her legs off in Dante's Peak. Can we just all hit play simultaneously in this 30 second clip?
All right. Hold on. I'm navigating to YouTube now. Grandma burns
legs.
Yeah, it's by YouTuber Mark Oswald has provided
famous
this clip for us.
YouTuber Mark Oswald.
Hold on.
32 seconds remaining in this clip.
Ready?
Hold on, Mark.
Three.
Mark, hold on.
Dale doesn't have it yet.
Okay, I'm ready.
All right, here we go. Hit play.
Oh my God, she's so.
That is lava water. The lava has been pouring into that lake for hours.
How come nobody else got out of the boat but she did?
Because she's a psychopath. God, listen to her.
She's boiling. God.
This horrified me when I was a kid.
Her grandma screaming. Oh my God, she can't even.
That grandmother played by Gary Shandling.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Amazing. Oh, God, I love that movie.
Man, her legs were boiled alive.
There you have it. Far and Away and the grandmother from Dante's Peak.
Yeah.
Really a gem of an episode when you think about it.
Yeah. What's next on our list here for Tom? All right, here we go. Oh boy. Wow. Are you ready?
Yeah, ready.
Next episode, A Few Good Men.
Oh man. Jesus Christ.
Can you imagine? It's going to be a good one.
Yeah.
Oh,
and it's going to
be
real
good.
It's going to be a great one.
And then after that, The Firm.
Oh, I don't think you've ever seen The Firm, Slim.
I have not seen The Firm. Right after The Firm, if I may, Interview with the Vampire.
Holy shit. Our namesake.
Our namesake.
Oh, my God.
God, it's only going to be going up from here. We're almost halfway through the filmography.
No, it hurts too much to think about.
Ooh.
All right, that's it.
We'll get done sometime late 2025.
No, this is renewed fervor. Okay.
Vigor.
Vim.
Vigor, fervor, veneer. It's all been renewed.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see everybody next time.
Love you.
Love you.